Welcome, welcome, coaches, teachers, parents, and medical professionals. You are listening to Larissa Mills and my podcast, At the Table. I am the founder of iParentGen.com. And today and every day, we are going to discuss how families and schools are managing technology and raising children and teaching them. We are also going to listen to how technology is impacting athletes and their level of sport. So let's get to it. Stay tuned and please call in with your questions or join us on Facebook or follow us on Instagram. But parents, you are not alone. There are courses, articles, and videos on my website. Please sign up for free. So let's get listening.
Hello there, KL Wells from Oregon. Everybody, yes. She is not here anywhere in Canada. She's where I would like to be. So welcome to the
Thank you. Talk. I am thrilled to be with you.
Thank you. And I really was inspired. I don't know how I came upon you, but I was reading some of your content, some of your material, because I am experiencing, when I speak to parents and families, especially our sport families now too, with the combined companies, we're learning more and more about children's addictions. And and now you know as well as I do that there are many different forms of addiction, and they're happening at a younger rate. So to introduce KL Wells, I have a little bit of an intro here because she's so awesome.
Thank you.
She's the founder of Voices and Courage. She's a successful advocate and entrepreneur, mom of an addict, and she's going to share her stories. In the midst of heartbreak, you were trying to find a community, navigate your way through that, and help your son with his addiction. And I applaud you, because many parents give up and they don't have other options for resources, but you stuck in there and you became a fearless leader who is now encouraging other families to get help, and you're providing them with a place to get help. So I applaud you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Because your job just got a lot harder in the last 2 years of the pandemic.
Yes, it did.
So thank you. We're going to talk about, on the Parent Talk today, we're going to talk about addictions and how our children's childhoods are being sort of taken away through phones, through lack of parenting, through lack of activities. Physically and mentally, our children are behind now, which we actually just talked about before the show. By 16, we know they've been on devices for 12,000 hours, missing gaps in their psychological development.
Right.
And you have created a program and a website, I guess, group called Voice and Courage to help listeners. So can you tell us and share a little bit about why you started this group?
Well, just a little bit of background is that I am the daughter of a mom who was addicted to prescription medications. My brother was also a cocaine addict. I married an alcoholic who I am subsequently divorced from. And I am the mother of an addict who is an adult now at 31. And so I have generational experience in this. And every step along the way, I continue to grow and stretch and learn and evolve as a human. And Voices and Courage was born out of a moment in time. This was about 5 years ago. My son's dad passed away. And my son went off the deep end into drug addiction.
Right.
And we didn't know it because we were living in two different states, but the signs began to kind of rear their head. Yes. Even from afar, he was distant and very much disconnected from us. We would get little, you know, phone calls every once in a while, but the real thing that kind of took place was he would begin to ask for money, and he was working.
Interesting.
And owned his own home. And we're like, and we would get the typical excuses. And so anyway, a year later, basically, he came clean that he was addicted to opioids. But it wasn't until that August where we got a phone call from him and we realized that he was in drug psychosis. And so, you know, we're 4.5 hours away.
Can you explain drug psychosis to some of the listeners so they don't, I don't think many people know what that is. Like you and I my husband's in medicine, you and I know what that is, but can you share that with the listeners?
Sure. It's when they've taken something that they didn't intend to take, but it was laced with something, and their brain, it just goes bonky.
A number of different drugs. But
yes, exactly. There's so many things drugs can be laced with.
Oh, gosh.
And so he was delusional. He was massively paranoid. He would ask me the same question over and over again. Mm. So it was really quite shocking, because here I have this, 26-year-old who was really quite bright, quite light, and very smart, and is reduced to the same question over and over again, massively paranoid, looking for people who were going to kill us, all the things. So we have the phone conversation. We kind of cleared the decks and drove up. And as we're driving, it's 4.5 hours away. So yeah. We're driving up. And we keep getting a phone call from him. The Mexican cartel is going to get you. Please tell me you're safe, so on and so forth.
Hallucinations, yeah.
Hallucinations, yes. So anyway, to shorten the story, we get up there. We finally find him through the police in his community. And we get him. We feed him. We take him to a hotel, hopefully to help him, kind of center and calm down. And the paranoia took over, and he leaves the hotel.
Oh.
And so... Mm-hmm. So, within an hour, I hear sirens, mm-hmm. and I looked outside the window, and I could see my son walking up the hill, without his shirt on or his sweatshirt on. And there's a cop car that pulls up behind him, and the officer gets out of the car and automatically draws his revolver. So I ran down the stairs as fast as I could to get to the street. Sidewalk.
Yeah.
And what ensued was, his first arrest.
Yep.
When he's in drug psychosis, he is screaming at me to help him.
Yep.
And I'm standing there trying to explain to the officers, he's in drug psychosis. He doesn't know what he's doing.
No, they don't. They literally don't have any.
No. Right? He thinks he's God. So I'm explaining all of this. Mm-hmm. And I'm watching every dream I had for him shatter.
Yeah.
On that sidewalk.
Yeah.
And I held it together as long as I could, mm-hmm. to give the officers information. Mm-hmm. Watch as it took four officers to load him in the car.
Because they have a surge of energy and adrenaline.
Oh my God. It is really quite remarkable. Mm-hmm. He's yelling at me to save him. And so he gets loaded. I've said everything I can say. I have held it together as long as I possibly could. Mm-hmm. At that point, my wife has shown up, mm-hmm. and I'm quickly explaining to her what's going on. And then we go up to the hotel room,
yeah.
and I completely lost it.
Well, it
completely lost it. Yes. However, what I would say is, we're going to talk about this a little bit later, is I put together these five strategies. And the first one is feel. Please feel,
yeah.
because there are a lot of people who just like block it, and they're not going to go there because they think if they start, they're not going to stop.
Okay.
So I just owned it. I dropped to my knees. I cried it out.
Because cathartic process too.
Absolutely.
That's how your body is telling you to deal with emotions.
Yes.
If you don't deal with them, oh, it's way worse down the road.
Yes.
Right?
And a lot of addiction is centered on the fact that we have not, trained ourselves in how to feel. Mm-hmm. So when something shows up, we just numb it.
Right.
Whether it's we work ourselves to death, or we do drugs, or we drink, or we shop, or we have sex, or all the things that are designed to distract us and numb
us.
The
reason why Netflix is the number one, right? You just sit there and keep clicking.
Right. Yeah. And you're just
actually saying you can become addicted.
Yes.
Binge watching, which
yes.
is one of the new addictions listed.
Mm-hmm.
Under some of the pediatric guidelines now. How pathetic is that? Like how far have we dropped?
Yes. Yes, exactly. So that's a whole conversation.
Yeah, I know. Don't worry. So. We'll do podcast number two.
Yes, we will. yeah. So what happened was, got some sleep. We went home the next day. Then we're trying to figure out how to navigate the jail system, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
There's another whole story around that. But this was on a Saturday night. Tuesday morning. Okay. I go in to have a client meeting with the corporation that I'm working with. I'm meeting with the executive team.
Right.
I walk in, I realize the energy is like, whoa, it is way off. And I'm like, okay, what's going on?
But you were perceptive and picked it up.
Oh yes. I'm very intuitive. And so, energy's way off. The CEO is not in the room. So within 15 minutes, I learn that the CEO's son overdosed and died on Saturday.
Oh.
So the same day that I witnessed my son's arrest in drug psychosis, mm-hmm. her son died in Mexico. So what happened for me was I had done enough of my work between Saturday and Tuesday mm-hmm. to hold the space for the executive team mm-hmm. who is in shock, mm-hmm. not knowing how to navigate this. How do we support our CEO? The company is in a growth mode. There are so many things going on. For all intents and purposes now, the CEO is taken out of the pocket. Yes.
Yeah.
And excuse me, how the hell do we do this? Mm-hmm. And so I was able to hold the space, help them navigate through right now, the crisis of the situation. Mm-hmm. I spent several hours with them, talked to the mom, the CEO on the phone, while she's in Mexico, picking her son's body up. And, I was centered and calm,
but
I wasn't triggered by my own experience.
Right. Yeah.
Yep. I was centered. I was present. I was calm. For them. And so it was within, I think, you know, over the next few weeks, I realized, okay, in order to be able to do that, I had some skills. Mm-hmm. So exactly kind of what did I do?
It's called resilience and emotional intelligence.
Yes, exactly.
I love you. Because if you didn't have those skills prior to that experience, can you imagine your level of climbing back out of the trench?
Well, I know enough coaches to know there would have been a lot of coaches that would have said, this is way over my pay grade. I do not know how to handle this. Y'all need to get some help. And when you do get some help, then call me back.
But you took leadership. And that's
absolutely.
Someone who just, you just navigated your way. It's exactly what we're teaching our athletes to do.
Yes. And everybody needs these skill sets. When we actually get to the five acts of courage, I mean, we all need to be operating with these five acts.
We do.
No matter what's going on in our lives. And I'm sure
good,
we're going to.
Bad, happy, sad. We all need them.
Absolutely. Yep. So what happened then was basically, you know, out of navigating with Sam, that's my son. I was looking for resources. I was looking for a community. I was looking for answers. I was looking for the things that I knew that I needed in order to be able to navigate this and still stay centered and so on and so forth. I already have a very high regimen in terms of self-care, which served me super, super well.
Right.
And I needed to level up. So
remind parents, though, that you only need to level up for certain things very few times in our lives, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we're talking, this is going to take all of your energy, all of your mm-hmm. skills mm-hmm. and all of your abilities and all of your time. Mm-hmm. And you have to start to think about how you're going to time manage and how mm-hmm. you're going to work with this and how you're going to cope with it. And it sounds like this is, some people take this and it ruins them, right?
Yes. A lot of people do.
But the more people that we teach the emotional mm-hmm. intelligence and we have mm-hmm. the steps to resilience,
right.
Like I'm teaching, like yourself, I'm teaching executives these things.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
I'm teaching medical students.
Right. Exactly. So the whole imbalance in terms of emotional intelligence and intelligence, we are so misaligned mm-hmm. that it is really quite frightening. And so I went to look for these resources and I could not find them. So I cobbled together
services. There weren't any services at the
Because the industry is geared for the addict or the alcoholic. It is really not geared for the family. Okay. So
your healthcare system,
you know, I mean, treatment is really geared for alcoholics and addicts. There's Al-Anon, which is family. It's the, you know, family side of AA. Okay. But it is only as good as the group that you go to.
That you go to, right?
Correct.
And you know, and that has money and funding. Yeah.
Well, and I mean, I've talked to people within the industry, and basically what they say is, one out of 10 people get the support that they need through Al-Anon in order to navigate. Yeah. I did not have that experience. So I needed to put together a community that was going to hold me and support me and have my back in the midst of this, that was going to drop the shame, the guilt, the judgment, and help me figure out how to, you know, do this as healthy for myself and be of service to my son in a way that was going to support him in a healthy way.
Right.
And so it is a daunting navigation if you haven't stepped into this, and when you're stepping into it through crisis,
right?
It is that much more daunting.
Right. Because if you're taking all this time for the services, when there's not just like, boom, I got this. Here's four different family addiction services. You hear in my city, I could name you five right now and different centers and different things. And it's covered by our healthcare system,
which is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we don't have that.
We do pay taxes accordingly, right? Mm-hmm. Based on wage. Mm-hmm. But I'd rather be paying those taxes and have the services, right? Because we're a very liberal, conservative country, right? Mm-hmm. So we take care of our own. No one's not ever going to have a heart transplant. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to pay for it.
Right.
You know, but we do work hard, and you have to earn that. You have to pay the taxes to have that too. Mm-hmm. But even if you're on welfare, which is a very small portion of the population,
right,
they get the services too, but we share all the services.
Right.
Now there's still problems in our healthcare system, of course.
Sure.
But, I was reading in some of the material that it is harder to find addiction services, counselors, like navigating that. Where do you start? Who do you get?
Well, you know, yeah, I mean, there's so many pieces to what you just said. But one of them is we're in a pandemic at this point. So even the services that are available are so overwhelmed that
behind.
The people...
They're so like a year waiting for a psychotherapist right now.
Right.
Right.
Right. So like, in the meantime, when you're in crisis, what do you do? And so that's why Voices in Courage was born, was to give people the resources that they needed in terms of what books should you be reading? What videos or documentaries could you be reading or watching? Where's a safe community where you're not going to feel judged or shame filled, or there's a stigma attached? Where is that safe?
Unfortunate, because we see that there's quite a lot of drugs actually in the more affluent families here because they can afford it.
So that's where the shame is so much more prevalent, and the silence is killing them. The silence is killing them.
I don't disagree.
Now,
I wanted to ask you a couple of questions because our system is very different from yours. So I just wanted to clarify, because a lot of our listeners are in half the states, right? Which is great. We're in 41 countries, which is great.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Really. Thank you.
Yes.
So did you seek, where did you seek help first? Like, which service did you navigate to first? Like counseling, right? Like, what did you go to first that you found?
So there was... two things. One was, I calling the jail to find out who do I talk to in the jail to be monitoring my son's mental health, because he's in psychosis at this point. So he's in solitary.
Yeah.
So finding who the mental health person was within the jail was one of my first phone calls.
Okay.
My second phone call was to my best friend, who, thank God for me, happens to be a practicing shaman. And so
bonus.
I knew safe place, no judgment, that I could make that phone call and have her help me talk it through and then help me navigate and map out what are my next best steps for me in order to get centered up and in a better place. And, you know, we touched on this briefly before we got on in terms of brain science. When you're in crisis, you're in your brainstem, which is fight, flight, or freeze. Yeah. Okay. So you don't make good decisions when you're in your brainstem. No. And so I knew enough to know that I needed to get from here to up here where I could make better decisions. And that is part of the process.
Right.
And knowing how to do that and then stay there and stay centered. So I made, you know, I picked up the bat phone and called my best friend.
Yeah.
And then found out who else I should be talking to, because she has an amazing network that was super helpful. Mm-hmm. For me to talk to different people to get different information and find out.
It's okay, not like the average person goes through this. Like, no, we don't have all of this criteria that we go through on speed dial. Right. We go, okay, check. Right. I did that. Check. I did that. Now, I want to learn more about what your program does for families. Can you share a little bit about that?
So if you go to the website,
and
you know, give us your email address, we will automatically send you the 5 Acts of Courage, which is a PDF that's about 33 pages long, mm-hmm. which is the 5 major things that I did and I still do. And I continue to elevate in each one of these areas to stay
centered, aware,
thriving in the midst of this chaos, because my son right now is just 11 days clean and sober again, mm-hmm. after having come off smoking fentanyl. Okay. So as I'm talking to you right now, mm-hmm. most parents would be in absolute crisis. I am not.
But you also know the stats. You also understand this path now, right? Like you've been there.
The difference though, Larissa, from my perspective, is you can understand all the stuff intellectually. It's a whole other ball game to navigate it from an emotional place.
I was just going to say, no, emotionally, yes. I don't know where I'd be, because I'd be in pain. If my child's in pain.
Yes,
and that
exactly.
would be the hardest thread to deal with on the heartstrings, right?
Yes. I mean, I posed a question on a Facebook page the other day, parents of addicts. And I said, do you think it is possible to love your life in the midst of your child's addiction?
Yep.
And the vast majority of the response was no. Now, I set an intention early on mm-hmm. to thrive mm-hmm. because I have a great marriage. I have great friends. I have a great business. I have a great life. All these major bubbles are fantastic for me, except for this one bubble that is my son. And so I needed to figure out, and I wanted to figure out, how could I thrive mm-hmm. and continue to be of service to my clients, my community, my family, so on and so forth, still be able to laugh, still be able to feel joy, still be able to do life while my son is navigating this disease. And so
I'm so
setting
glad
that intention.
He has you.
What's that?
I'm so glad that he has you and your abilities to be able mm-hmm. to focus and mm-hmm. to be able to be patient and have these skills now, because mm-hmm. not every parent does that. Do you know how many parents abandon their children?
Yes.
I had no idea about those statistics until I spoke to someone at our addiction services.
Yeah. I think, you know, part of the challenge is that the pain is so difficult for parents.
Yeah.
They don't know how to rise above it, to love and support their child while they're suffering.
Because two separate parts of your brain that need to mm-hmm. really, like, right? Like you have to be really proactive in all these other areas, but then this part mm-hmm. of the brain, actually, it's our feelings part of our mm-hmm. brain mm-hmm. that we have to sort of put everything into perspective and triage the filing cabinet. What mm-hmm. can I deal with? What can I not? What can I deal mm-hmm. with? What can I not? What can I put away until I'm really ready?
Right. Right.
You and gotta open them all. You got to open up all the drawers.
You do. And I think, you know, because this is such a complex thing.
It is. I can imagine.
It's yes. I think a lot of parents opt out because there's shame. There's guilt. There's judgment. There's the stigma. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, they are so riddled with just heartbreaking pain they don't know how to fix their child or their addict.
Yeah.
And it's not our job, but that's the message that we get generally, is yeah. that our job is to, you know, kind of the mommy code
yeah.
Or the daddy code is we're supposed to fix our child. And that is really so, just an illusion.
Just do this. You can't just do this and it's not, no. You can't fix a boo-boo, right?
No.
All the time.
No.
And this is an inside boo-boo, even more complex.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So quite frankly, out of our own pain, we opt out because we don't know how to deal with it. So we let our kids go because we don't know how to deal with the pain of this. Mm-hmm. And so I chose to figure out how to navigate my own pain and feel the pain when I felt it. And figure out, you know, I think about this in terms of, you know, you get some information and then you go high if it's good information, or you go really low if it's bad information.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I didn't want to keep doing that. I wanted to figure out how to level it out. So I'm not quite there yet, but I'm getting much better at kind of loving what is.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter what my son tells me, I am able to love him because I see him yeah. even in his addict body. I see his soul. I know who he yeah. really is.
Yeah.
And I know that I'm dealing with two different people there. Mm-hmm. And continue to deliver the message,
right.
which we have year after year after year,
yeah.
that he is always loved no matter what he does.
And that's so important. Is like, I mean, we have had different issues with our children. And when mm-hmm. I've counseled other families, it really is about just being there,
mm-hmm.
just listening, just show mm-hmm. up, tell mm-hmm. them you love them, tell them that you're there for them. No matter, you tell me what I need to do. What do you need?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and have that language. Because if you're always going to say, do up your shirt, do this, why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you? That's mm-hmm. just going to steer them a further away down the spiral, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's what we're seeing in a lot of our athletes. Now, I know we don't have time actually to talk about addiction with social media and the phones, and that's how that's driving that dopamine and cortisol, we know.
Right.
Yeah. And it is driving the prescription drug addiction
yes.
that we're seeing now, a mm-hmm. huge, huge jump in prescription addiction.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So my last question is a hard one.
Okay.
So if I gave you a magic wand,
mm-hmm.
if you could help prevent this from happening or help families see it happening,
mm-hmm.
what would you change with your magic wand if you could provide anything or do anything to help change them from going this down this road or preventing or seeing it early?
I think it's actually not a hard question. Okay. As soon as you start to see things that are wonky, that don't make sense, that your child is different, there's yep. a problem.
Yep.
And the wand would be ask for help.
Okay.
Ask for help, because I deal with people all the time who are reticent to ask for help because of the societal stigmas, the shame, the guilt, all the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we have got to drop that. I said to you before we got on, I said, right. you know, silence kills.
That's the name of my book, The Silent Family. And it shows all the kids on a phone, this little baby with a rattle wanting to play.
Right. Right. Exactly. And so, if I could wave a wand, it would be ask for help.
Oh, that's good. So I want to just kind of summarize some of the steps and tips for some of our parent listeners today before we jump off. So
mm-hmm.
there's a few things that you said that I really liked.
Okay.
So I really like that you said that we need to always be sort of our optimal self so that mm-hmm. when things come around like this, mm-hmm. we are equipped. Mm-hmm. We are ready. We mm-hmm. are We know what's going on. And now we know, you know, you have this resource for families as well, right?
Mm-hmm,
which
mm-hmm.
they have to go to the website and get the material if they're interested and go. And mm-hmm. the other thing you said was be attentive. Notice if anything changes. And I really like the fact that you said, if a crisis happens, let your body process it the way it wants to, because it's probably yes. the natural mm-hmm. way you want to process it. I mm-hmm. don't know what I would do if that would, I can't say, I'm fortunate mm-hmm. for now, but, you don't know, right? They could get,
you don't know till you know.
We're dealing with a whole bunch of elite athletes who are addicted to prescription drugs because they've been injured in professional sports.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And they're trying to have normal lives, and it's just so hard for them to have that normal life. And then you said, you know, the magic wand is your liberative question was ask for help. Like, parents, this is no time to fool around. You have to go, you have to ask. I would be, who out there? You know, because it's a village. It really, in the end, it is a village that will take care of your child.
Right. Right. Exactly. I mean,
is there anything you want to add to that?
Well, yes. 95% of our success or failure is directly determined by the community that we surround ourselves with.
Exactly.
So if we have a community that helps us thrive, they will continue to help us thrive in the midst of it.
Right.
That's one. Self-care. That was the thing I'm very vigilant about. When that incident happened with my son, I got home, I upped my regimen. I'm like, okay, I need to do more things. Build in more massages, build in more yoga, build in more quiet time, build in more out in the nature. I needed to up my care so I had the space to
work with it,
absorb what was happening to me and process and get back to center. Again, continue to feel. What I would encourage people is you will cry and you will stop and you need to rest. So getting sleep is really, really important. Mm-hmm. Eating really well, getting exercise, all the things that we know. But when you're in crisis, it is so much more elevated in terms of its importance.
Routine, right?
Absolutely. Yes. The other thing too, quite frankly, is continue to be a vigilant learner.
Oh, we all should all the time, but that's our
always
mindset, right?
Yes. And make sure that you're not just absorbing and taking everybody's opinions. Pick the things that resonate with you and let the rest go, because there were things I read or people I listened to and I'd go, that doesn't fit. And so be careful about that. But what I would say is the beliefs that you hold or the questions that you ask are really, really powerful. So one is, I really firmly believe and have life experience in this, when your life feels like it is falling apart, it is actually falling together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's so powerful. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story about your son and how you managed it in this amazing program that you've built for parents. And we need it today. Mm-hmm. Addiction's not going anywhere.
Nope.
It's just getting worse, and it will for the next 10 years until education changes, until some of our guidelines change. So thank you so much for being here today on the Parents
Absolutely. Talk. I was thrilled. This was a great conversation.